Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. You know who I think is happiest about the Major League Baseball scandal? It's got to be Odell Beckham Jr., right? I mean, not a great week for Odell, or not a great night for Odell, I guess is more appropriate on Monday night. You know, I've seen a lot of people talk about Beckham and him wanting attention out of this. Is that what we think? You think that was a ploy by Odell to get attention? Do you really think Odell was thinking very clearly? Have you seen some of the clips that have come out since then about that night? You know, I get it. Odell has a history. And I've myself said that the guy wants attention at times and it has been self-obsessed and made things about him. He's a habitual line stepper, but you hope those were the only lines he was dealing with, the lines he's stepping over on Monday night, because he was not in his right mind. That, let's be clear about it. If you've seen that clip of him with the megaphone, and then just his general behavior on that night. I can't tell you for sure what was going on in his brain, or what substances, you know, maybe have been interacting with his brain. I don't know. That's speculation. All I can tell you is from observing his behavior and watching that, I don't think he was thinking clearly, and I don't think that was some sort of elaborate ploy to simply get more attention on him. If that's his default nature, sure, okay, fine. Maybe that's part of it. But I don't think that was some well-thought-out plan from Odell. You know, the money thing was funny for how absurd it was, in a sense. Like, I don't care if those guys were getting money. That doesn't bother me whatsoever. But don't be such a dummy if you're Odell. What are you doing? What are you doing? And from his point of view, too, like the idea that it was fake money, I was really hoping it wasn't fake money, because as stupid as it would have been for it to be real money, it would have been corny for it to be fake money. So, you don't want to be both stupid and corny. And it was both stupid and corny as is. Again, carrying around money like that, cash like that, doesn't make you look cool. It's like the Jay-Z line, on the gram, holding money to your ear, there's a disconnect. We don't call that money over here. About the money phones that people were doing, you know, you look like an idiot. No need to do that. Everybody knows you got bread, dude. And Odell, when you combine that with the season the Browns had and his watch fiasco and the visor and so on and so forth, going back to the boat party with the Giants and why he was traded away, I understand he's a lightning rod for criticism, and deservedly so. He acted like a fool. But I don't think he acted like a fool because he was, you know, scheming to make it all about him as much as he wasn't thinking at all. And slapping an officer on his butt in the locker room. Again, not something he should be arrested for. He shouldn't go to jail for that. Let's not be ridiculous. But at the same time, what are you doing? You know, I'm not going to defend it. What are you doing? So I think Odell was fortunate because the baseball stuff just took the attention off of him. Because otherwise we would have had a couple of days of Odell Beckham takes out there. And instead it had a little window, but now it's sort of gone. So I think Odell Beckham Jr. should write a note of thanks to the Houston Astros. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4CBS. 4227, sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. Let's go to Stan in Fort Worth, Texas. Stan, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Robin, man. Thanks for taking my call. Love the show. I just wanted to weigh in on a few things baseball.
Sure.
Especially when it comes to the scandal. Man, I absolutely think MLB did a good job in what they're doing to try to keep the game fair in the way that it should be. And I'm listening in some of the callers and what's going on and what people are talking about, and it's like, well, we don't understand the culture. And, well, the culture of baseball is a lot of the times just tradition in itself. And, Robin, we all speed, right? And the person that gets caught is the one that gets the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to see the cops deliver these tickets to help minimize the speeding. I mean, there's nothing wrong with keeping a standard in the game and saying, hey, no, we're not going to allow that. And especially like when it comes to the Hall of Fame, you know, whether or not this is going to be talked about for a long time. Yeah, I think so, because we still talk about PEDs. But again, I just got done visiting the Hall of Fame this past spring, and it was really cool to say, hey, it means something to be in here, and it takes a standard, and your behavior matters. Your behavior and what you do matters whether you get in here or not. And I just don't see that there's anything wrong with keeping a standard to the game. And just a couple other things real quick, Robin,
mm-hmm.
As far as like athleticism in the game, every sport has got, you got to be an athlete. So when you look at, what sport's more athletic, man, the single most hardest thing to do in sports is to hit a 90 plus mile an hour baseball. The second probably hardest thing to do is to hit that thing 400 feet over a wall.
You know, the difference here, Stan, is, difficulty doesn't necessarily equate to athleticism, right? Like heart surgery is very difficult, but it's not very athletic. Now, baseball is different because you got to turn around on a fastball. I'm not saying – I've always sort of used baseball as the line of demarcation. If a sport is less athletic than baseball, it's not really a sport in my mind. If more athletic, obviously it's a sport. And then baseball, you've got the guys who are clearly great athletes, and then you got like, David Wells, who's a specialist. Even John Kruk once said he's not an athlete; he's a baseball player. So there's a little bit of a mixture of that. Of course, the act itself is very difficult, but there's not a, you know, for instance, I can sit there and take a bunch of swings at a fastball, and if I sit there long enough and I keep swinging and swinging and swinging and practice and practice and practice, eventually I'll probably make contact. And no matter how many times, I'm not going to dunk a basketball, because I just physically am not capable of it.
Well, Robin and I agree, but here's where the athleticism kicks in. Just like in baseball, just like in basketball or football,
yeah,
you have athletic positions and unathletic positions. So you want to talk about the athletic. Man, look at the way at a shortstop and a second baseman turns a double play.
No doubt.
You have to be extremely athletic to do that.
Agreed.
Yeah, if you're a pitcher or a first baseman, yeah, those positions don't require a whole lot of athleticism, but neither does the center in football. Neither does the center in basketball.
I disagree on I think on basketball, you got the best athletes on the planet, personally. You got 450 spots. That's it. People play it all over the world. And even at center nowadays, you have to be outside the three-point line, right? You're not even dealing with the olden days where it was lumbering centers. In football, even at the center spot, you're getting up. You have to explode the line of scrimmage. You have to, physically collide with one of a great athlete on the other side. So I would push back a little bit on that, but it's always an interesting conversation to have. As far as what you said about the Hall of Fame, I would say that the standards there, let's not be Puritan about it, because there are guys in the Hall of Fame who were bad guys, and there are guys in the Hall of Fame who were cheaters. But as far as this specifically goes, in baseball, you're dealing with something that's a little bit different than that at this point, too, because it's not even just about a player. It's about a team. David in Youngstown, Ohio. David, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I could really talk now about OBJ, but the reason I was calling was obviously about the Astros cheating scandal, so I guess I'll keep it with what I called. But, I got to hand it to the commissioner for what he's done so far, concerning this, by getting rid of, the general manager, the manager, and obviously the fallout with the Red Sox and now the Mets. But I really think who else should be held accountable is the players. And I find it hard to believe that he hasn't taken a stance, you know, with the players yet. And I know he'd be fighting the union on and on and on. But, you know, where do they come into this play here? And I mean, if my solution is, if I was the manager, there'd be a good possibility that any player that was on that team during that season would be suspended for some part of the season.
That's the other, you know, that is a part of it that has to come into play is the player aspect of it, because it's just been the GMs and the managers who have been a part of it as far as the discipline goes. And that's a good point, because look, yeah, you could go with I'm just taking orders sort of a defense, or these were my bosses were the ones that were actually orchestrating it. But when you're a player and participating in it, that's a thing too. And these guys that were doing it, you know, they got Jose Altuve is a great player, right? No, there's no questions asked. But he got a huge contract, I think, the next year. I'm pretty sure Altuve signed a $100-something million deal in 2018. Jake in Chicago. Jake, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You know what bothers me the most about this whole scandal is you cheat to win a World Series, and you get, what, a suspension for a year? Is that what these guys are getting? They're getting suspended for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Rose bet on his team against his team, but he didn't cheat to win, and he's banned for lifetime.
Well, again, we don't.
I got a real serious problem with this.
Because you want Rose to be reinstated, or just specifically, you know, being that the degrees of what you think they were guilty of.
The degrees of what I think they were guilty of. I think Rose deserves to be reinstated. I won't go so far as to say I want him to be reinstated, but Rose deserves to be reinstated if they're only going to suspend these guys for a year. Because what they did, they cheated to win the very pinnacle of the sport, and Rose had a compulsive gambling habit.
Look, Pete Rose is a great player, right? But Pete Rose has done enough since all that where I don't trust him on anything. So the idea that he's this is not judgmental. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I do believe he should be in the Hall of Fame based on the merits of his career. Just like I believe, you know, a lot of those steroid guys should be in the Hall of Fame based on the merits of their career. But the one thing I'm not going to, like, really just accept on its surface is that Pete Rose only bet on his team to win, or it had no impact on the game. When you're a degenerate to that level, there's nothing you're not going to try and do. So I there's nothing I would be surprised that Pete Rose did to maybe try and win his bets, including, you know, throwing games for his own team based on certain decisions he was making. So I don't want to say what he did had no impact on the wins and losses in a way of differentiating it with the Astros scandal, because I don't know what he did. I don't know what he did. One thing I do know, Sunday on CBS, it's the AFC Championship, featuring a matchup of two contrasting styles as Derrick Henry and the Titans head to Kansas City to face Mahomes and that seemingly unstoppable Chiefs offense, with the winner heading to Super Bowl 54. It all begins with a special two-hour edition of the NFL Today, beginning at 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific on CBS. 855-212-4227. Kyrie Irving. Did you hear what he said yesterday? Well, you will coming up. It's the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
You know, if you've listened to me, I'm now a Brooklyn Nets fan. I don't want to have to give the whole origin story, but started last year. And I've defended Kyrie Irving because I think the criticism of him at times went way too far. You know, people talking about him like he hasn't averaged nearly 30 points per game in the NBA Finals, didn't hit one of the biggest shots in NBA history in the face of a dynasty, and isn't filthy on the court. Like, you know, just like going too far. There were fair criticisms of him, like he hasn't elevated a team by himself. Never saw the playoffs until LeBron got there. Maybe didn't show great leadership in Boston. I mean, that's fairly self-evident. but people went a little too far. I didn't love Kyrie's comments the other night, though. The idea that he singled out certain teammates, and maybe he didn't do it on purpose. I mean, he walked that back and said he talked to them and just wishes he had named some other guys. But it didn't come across well, even if it wasn't meant in a negative way. Especially because of the timing of it. I mean, Kyrie had just missed months. He'd been back for 3 games. The Nets are 5-9 with Kyrie in the lineup, 13-13 with him out of the lineup. Now, that's not to say they're better without Kyrie. That's silly. But it just to show you the timing was poor, especially after a game where he was a minus 29 on the court. And I think Kyrie's issue is sometimes his delivery, too. Like, he makes valid points, but loses people in the way he delivers them. The Instagram post he put out when he was supposed to go play in Boston and people were saying he was faking the injury, he put out like an Instagram post. It looked like the opening scroll of a Star Wars movie. And it just was like, when you read it, you're like, what are you talking about? But there would be these parts of it where you go, oh yeah, I get that. Like, I do get his point of view about, you know, being unfairly criticized and scrutinized to a degree that's just like not sane. You know, the idea that, for instance, that he was hurt, or not hurt, but faking an injury to avoid Boston. Where did that come from? That's just people wanting that to be true. The guy wound up missing weeks and weeks after that. Or that it was a mental health issue that kept him out. That's not fair to him to say that about him. And we are a little nuts, right? We are a little nuts in the media and with fans, where we've gotten to a point where we just talk about everything. We're constantly in the quest for a story. So any quote can be taken out of context, or anything that gives us that little morsel, we run with it. And we wind up talking about guys all the time. So we, you know, every day on a debate show, someone's discussing Kyrie Irving's character. And he might get fed up with that. Like, I understand that. I do. I really do. And that's, you know, where I think in many ways Kyrie loves being a basketball player, but not a celebrity. Now, when it's convenient for him, he likes it. He gets to sell his sneakers and be celebrated. But when he's criticized and scrutinized, oftentimes unfairly, and I think it is oftentimes unfair, he doesn't like it. And yesterday in Nets practice, in explaining his comments, I again thought he made some valid points, but you might not love the delivery.
When I'm out there with the guys, just impact winning. You know, that's really what it comes down to. You know, it's not like I'm a yelling at everybody in the freaking locker room all the time, and you hear all these stories, you know. And at the end of the day, my name, it was given to me by my grandfather. I'm very grateful, but it's in a lot of people's mouths all the time, and it is what it is. I've earned that respect in terms of how great I am as a player, and there's still more goals I want to accomplish in this league, and I can't do it without improving an organization and winning a championship, and that's what it comes down to. So I'm going to continue to push. I'm going to continue to demand greatness out of myself and demand greatness out of my teammates, and we go from there. If it's harsh as a leader or it's too much for anybody, you're not in our locker room. Stay the out. It's as simple as that.
So, you know, again, some of that I follow and understand, and some of it I even like. And then other parts of it, the delivery, it's like, okay. Like, if he had said, look, my goal here is to win a championship, and that's what I'm focused on. I was speaking in the moment, talking about what it takes to win a championship. I know I've been there, right? And I'm going to do whatever I can to win a championship. My bad for not, you know, mentioning certain guys. I didn't mean to leave anybody out. I just think, you know, there are certain levels we need to get to win a championship. And at the same time, you know, no matter what I say and do, you guys won't stop talking about it. And, you know, I didn't mean that to come across the wrong way. I explained that to my teammates, and they're cool with it. So you should be cool with it. You know, you don't know the dynamics of what we got going on, and we're going from here. All right, cool. I'm fine with that. But again, it's just the way it comes across at times, where he's sort of separating himself and saying, I've been great and I know what I need to accomplish, or I know what I've done to earn the idea that you put my name in your mouth all the time, and then complaining about my name being in your mouth all the time. Like, I get it. I get the gripe. I do. Like, why are we always, everything I do, you're picking apart? You know, my leadership, whether I have a mental health problem, whether I faked an injury, stuff like that, I could get that why that bothers somebody. You know, that's not cool. If that's his issue. But at the same time, he's saying he earned it through being a great player. Okay, so which one is it? And then, you know, when he goes on to talk about the locker room and you're not there, I'm just not sure what message I'm supposed to be following with Kyrie there. He's been mostly all smiles since he got to Brooklyn. And again, that's part of where his point is salient, where people are going to make a bigger deal out of this than there probably needs to be a deal made out of it. I don't think this comment or that soundbite you just heard is the end of the world or is going to collapse the Brooklyn Nets organization or anything ridiculous like that. I just think, you know, Kyrie sometimes in his delivery loses some of the points he's trying to make. That's all.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
It is The Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Time to get into some NFL. You would have thought that'd be the bulk of the show, but there's been a crazy week in sports. To do so, I'm joined by Tyler Sullivan, NFL writer for CBS Sports. And Tyler, before we get to this weekend's games, real quick, Jason Garrett, offensive coordinator for the Giants. I wonder, you know, if he gave Jerry Jones a heads up or if Jerry Jones found out the same way we did, either on Twitter or some text notification or something along those lines. How much tangible impact do you think this has next season? And what do you think it says about Garrett? Is it say he just really likes coaching, that he's willing to take a role under first-time head coach Joe Judge?
And I think that's just the position that he's in right now. I mean, obviously, there are no head coaching jobs available at the moment. Everything's filled up, and he wants to be involved next year with an offense that does have some weapons. I mean, Daniel Jones going into year two, Saquon Barkley, we all know the cast of characters. So if he thinks that he can have success with that group, then all of a sudden that builds up his stock. And also the fact that you just said first-year head coach Joe Judge, he might be leaned on a little bit more than the average offensive coordinator just because of his head coaching background. So to me, there is a window here for Jason Garrett to possibly look good and maybe freshen up his image here after that Dallas departure.
All right, let's get into this weekend. Obviously, I think the game that most people are interested in is the earlier game on Sunday, the Titans and the Chiefs, for a couple of reasons. Obviously, you know, Patrick Mahomes being who he is and probably the biggest box office in the sport at the moment. And then Tennessee, where it's I've been in this boat where going into Foxborough, yeah, the Titans are playing well, and New England looks like they might be towards the end, but is it really going to, you know, finish with the Titans on the road in New England? And then the next week, Baltimore, heavy favorites, and I think almost everybody picked Baltimore, but the Titans do it again. Now it's deja vu almost, because I'd imagine almost everybody in the world is picking the Chiefs. What kind of chances do you give the Titans in this game, considering Kansas City's not huge on the defensive side, and that may allow Derrick Henry to get free a bit?
No, and that's true. And that one of the biggest things that I think we'll find out today in terms of that defense for Kansas City is Chris Jones. He didn't play in the divisional round, defensive tackle for them. He's one of their key run stoppers. So obviously you'd like to have him when you're going up against Derrick Henry. And so I think Andy Reid said yesterday that we'll find more about it today. He's listed as questionable. They want to see how he feels. So to me, that's a key piece to follow, whether he's going to play or not. And it may come down to the wire. But ultimately, I do give the Titans a chance in this one just because we've seen it this postseason before. Like you just said, they've shown the ability, Mike Vrabel, to get his team ready to not only get ready for a playoff game, but to go into hostile environments and beat teams that are better than them on paper, at least talent-wise. They're able to go into New England, able to go into Baltimore. So to me, if you are the Titans, I think that you're just going in with your standard game plan that you've been doing, handing the rock off to Derrick Henry and seeing what he can give you, and almost follow the mold of how the Indianapolis Colts were able to beat the Kansas City Chiefs in week 5. They dominated time of possession. They ran the ball 45 times. I think they ran for 180 yards. So to me, that's the way that they can beat them, because if you are the Tennessee Titans and you go out to a Houston Texans-like lead and you up by 14 points, 24 points, whatever the case may be, you have a guy in Derrick Henry who can chew up clock and really, really help you in that regard to keep the ball away from Patrick Mahomes from mounting some sort of 28-point comeback in the second quarter. So to me, that's how you win that game if you're Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, like it seems pretty self-explanatory, right? You get up early, you milk the clock. all those things. You keep Mahomes on the sidelines. But the one pushback I would have is, you know, can Tennessee score enough points? Because, you know, Kansas City's just a different animal. I didn't even call that a comeback last week as much as a clapback. You know, who would have thought when you're down 24-0 you would win going away? Is that going to be a problem for the Titans where they could execute everything you just said well, but you got a top 30 or something like that to beat Kansas City?
Yeah, no, it's something to watch there, especially, you know, this Titans defense in the regular season, they were one of the worst teams in the NFL, one of the worst red zone defenses in the NFL. But you come into the postseason here, and they're holding the New England Patriots and Baltimore Ravens, Tom Brady and Lamar Jackson, to just 2 of 7 in the red zone. So they've been pretty good in that regard. So to me, the defense has been solid, but that could certainly kind of come to roost in this game, especially when you're playing a guy like Patrick Mahomes, who has, you know, all the talent in the world and then some. You know, he can run it, he can throw it, he can throw it out of the stadium. So to me, you know, if they can stop them in those scoring opportunities, obviously they'll be able to do that. But, you know, to me, I just don't know if Kansas City defensively, you know, to me is a team that maybe has some faults. So I think that maybe they'll be able to keep it up. But again, Ryan Tannehill will have to make some throws there. And really hasn't been asked to do that too much. It's really just been Derrick Henry these past two games. For Ryan Tannehill, less than 80 yards passing. So to me, he's going to need to step up more than what we've seen so far if Tennessee is going to be able to keep up the scoring with Kansas City.
Robin Lundberg talking to Tyler Sullivan, NFL writer for CBS Sports here on CBS Sports Radio. Now, how much do you buy into the notion that as we get further along, Andy Reid, you know, tightens up a little bit? Because I think the guy's obviously a great coach, and one Super Bowl ring would be so much to put him into, like, all-time great coach territory. Do you think that's a reputation he has earned, or you think that's an unfair thing?
Well, it's the one he has. I mean, you know, you can't deny the history behind Andy Reid and his, you know, it's seemingly struggle in these big games. So to me, like you're saying, you know, if you're talking about Hall of Fame candidacy, and that's kind of really the big picture discussion when you talk about Andy Reid and a potential Super Bowl, I mean, that would be the ultimate slam dunk. I think he probably gets in regardless of whether he wins the Super Bowl or not. But if he's able to take Patrick Mahomes and this Kansas City Chiefs team to a Super Bowl, where it really the floodgates in the past has really opened up for them with Baltimore and New England being eliminated, that to me, a Lombardi Trophy with Andy Reid on it, that is almost a guarantee that he gets into camp. That's kind of the difference we're looking at here with him.
Yeah, I mean, you could say he stands to gain the most of anybody still involved in the playoffs. I could also make the argument for Patrick Mahomes, given that he would be on the on-ramp to all-time great conversations faster than anyone we've ever seen. And in the other game, you could make the argument, for Aaron Rodgers and what a second Super Bowl ring would do. But for Rodgers, this is kind of a step up in weight class. You know, the reason that I had any faith at all in the Seahawks was Russell Wilson. The Legion of Boom is gone. Russell Wilson was, I believe, responsible for 94% of the Seahawks' offensive yards in the playoffs. But now San Francisco, that's a different caliber of defense. Do you see Rodgers being able to replicate what he did last week against Seattle in San Francisco?
Well, I mean, if you just look at history, you know, history would say no. He's not really that great in the NFC Championship. He's 1-2. He's thrown more interceptions than he has touchdowns. He's less than 60% completion percentage. So to me, if you just look at the history there, he hasn't really shown up in these games all too much. And then when you face a team like San Francisco in their building, who are not only able to disrupt you in the secondary, but have pass rushers that I believe sacked them 6 times earlier this season when these two clubs went head-to-head, held them down to 8 points. Like, to me, that is going to be something that's going to be critical here. If he can make those throws to Davante Adams and all of his guys in the receiving game, great. But his track record plus the opponent in this spot, to me, seems like it's going to be a tough day for Aaron Rodgers.
What has to go right for Green Bay for that not to be the case?
I think they'd have to use Aaron Jones a little bit more. I mean, we talk about the other Aaron. I mean, you look at this 49ers defense, had just pretty much blanked Dalvin Cook in the Minnesota Vikings running game earlier this season. That can't happen with Green Bay because that has been their bread and butter, really, for them all season, whether it's Jamal Williams or it's Aaron Jones. Those guys in the backfield really do start things here. You saw it towards the end of the regular season. Aaron Rodgers wasn't lighting up the scoreboard or the box score by any stretch of the imagination. He was throwing less than 200 yards in some of these games, but they were still able to win the football game. So to me, this Packers team almost reminds me a little bit more of the New England Patriots team we saw last year, relying on the run game more than we've ever seen before, especially with an all-time quarterback. They kind of have that bravado. You know, obviously the Tennessee Titans are the shocker this playoffs, but the Packers seems like, at least the way Aaron Rodgers speaks, that nobody believes in us, nobody's counting us in. So to me, they have that sort of demeanor, but ultimately I think it really relies in the backfield in that running game. If they're able to establish something against that San Francisco front, then they'll be able to open things up with play action and Aaron Rodgers and all of that.
Though it sounds to me like you think we're going to be seeing Chiefs 49ers.
Yeah, I think you know, I made my picks earlier this week and I had the Titans covering, so I think it's going to be a rather close game. But if I really had to guess, it's going to be Patrick Mahomes versus Jimmy Garoppolo in the Super Bowl.
Patrick Mahomes, back to him for a second. You know, in this business, everybody's got something to say, and you know, he's done a lot to say stuff about. The way I try to articulate it is, you can't obviously put him in a class with the Tom Brady's of the world or any of those guys yet. He just hasn't accomplished enough. But if you want to play word tricks, you could separate great and best, right? He's clearly not the greatest. He's clearly not the most accomplished. But have you ever seen anyone better?
Well, it's the similar conversation that we've often had with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, we were just speaking about him. You know, obviously he doesn't have the cachet to really get into the all-time great discussions just because of the Super Bowls. But I don't think anybody denies his talent. I mean, I think we often say he's one of the most talented quarterbacks to ever play this game. And I think we're on that discussion right now with Patrick Mahomes, because not only can he just throw it, you know, pretty much 100 yards all across the field, can make every single throw sidearm, overhand, with his left hand. I mean, we've seen it, all of it. He can also run the football fairly well. I mean, he's not Lamar Jackson, but I mean, he is the most complete quarterback that I've seen so early in his career in recent memory. I think that's the best thing that we can give him right now. Obviously, Super Bowls need to come. MVPs still need to come, even though he just won one. To me, he is the most complete quarterback and perfect for this modern era than I've seen.
Tyler, appreciate your time and insight this morning, man. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Tyler Sullivan, NFL writer for CBS Sports. This is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. Who stands to gain the most from a Super Bowl? Is it Aaron Rodgers to get a second? Is it Patrick Mahomes to fast-track his way into these conversations? Is it Andy Reid to finally, you know, win the big game? 855-212-4227. You know, I see on my sheet here a note about both Antonio Brown and Luke Kuechly. And you wouldn't think on the surface those two guys are related, but in a sense, they do bring my thought process to a similar place. I mean, when Kuechly announced his retirement the other night, sometimes I see the word shocking. I wouldn't use that word. Surprising, sure. Look, I'm not going to pretend I knew that was coming. So I was surprised. I was not expecting to see him announce his retirement. Therefore, I'm surprised. But I don't think you can call any retirement shocking anymore. Especially, you know, for players who have made a lot of money. That's a calculation you're starting to see more and more. And for Kuechly in particular, I mean, he's a guy who's been a part of some scary incidents out on the field. I remember, I think it was in 2017, that moment of him in tears on the card on the way into the locker room after suffering a concussion. I mean, just scary. And it's scary what football can do to you. I mean, and we just saw Rob Gronkowski and Andrew Luck retire, and those guys were young as well. So I think that's a calculation a lot of players are having, and you hope that you're in the right frame of mind to make it. Again, it helps to have the bank account, no doubt. Kuechly made $60 million or whatever. That is huge, because you want to be able to have the wherewithal and the ability to get out when you can. So I don't call any of those retirements shocking anymore. But you want to be able to make that decision on your own and not have an Antonio Brown situation go on. Now, I don't know what's going on with Antonio Brown. I just know something's wrong with that guy. I don't know if it's, you know, a mental health issue that any of us can face, or if it, you know, has something to do with head trauma in football. I talked to Max Starks last night, former lineman for the Steelers, and these are his words, not mine. He said he thinks, you know, there's something wrong with the frontal lobe from football, from taking hits in football. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. Even a doctor couldn't tell you because you can't test for that stuff until, unfortunately, after people are dead. But it is a scary situation. You know, and a part of me feels for Antonio Brown because I know he's not in his right mind. And then part of me, of course, feels for the people that are being victimized by Antonio Brown. The mother of his children, the women who have, you know, leveled accusations against him, if the accusations are true. That's just a you know, scary situation, really. And Drew Rosenhaus, if he did indeed sever his relationship with Brown in saying that he needs to get help, I think he did the right thing. He did it way too late. This should have happened a long time ago. I mean, this was clear. This guy's been crying for help. Almost everything he does is a cry for help. So I am, even if it's late, I guess I'm glad somebody did something publicly. Because otherwise, you know, I don't think the Antonio Brown story is going to have a good ending. Which makes me think of another story that was just told on Netflix that has to do with the NFL as well, which I'll get to coming up next. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.